Facing up to a natural disaster on the scale that we've seen in Australia over the last few years is pretty terrifying. But try doing it with children. That takes it to another dimension altogether. Dr. Susie Burke is the Australian Psychological Society's senior psychologist. I wanted to ask her specifically about dealing with disasters and having children involved as well. I wanted to ask her about families directly affected by natural disasters, but I also wanted to know how we who are not directly impacted can also perhaps cushion the blow for our small children.
So families that have had to leave their home because their home was inundated with water are in an unusual situation in that they're usually staying in an evacuation centre for a short time or camped out at friends and family, and that's very unsettling for everybody in the family, but particularly for children who really like routines and boundaries on their life. And there's a lot that parents can do to help children feel more settled in an unfamiliar place, like, for example, re-establishing some routines and some new rhythms as quickly as possible. And it is possible to do that wherever you are, whether you are camped out on the living room floor with some friends for a few weeks, because it can be around things like putting kids to bed, you know, having familiar stories, maybe spending a little bit more time putting them to bed than usual, because often children are needing some extra reassurance and comfort when something unsettling has happened. So there can be those routines around bedtime. There can be also routines around meal times. You can make up these routines wherever you are. You might, if you're in an evacuation centre, agree that you're always going to eat together in the same place and the family's always going to come together and you're going to sit down and you're going to finish before you get up and go. All those sorts of things that then become something that happened yesterday and is going to happen again tomorrow are settling and reassuring for children. Parents will be surprised, even for parents that have had to rush up in a big hurry and left everything, they'll be surprised just how well they remember some of those stories. And children are very good at filling in the gaps. And sometimes the stories then just need to be retold without the book. And that is still a very familiar thing.
Of course, this will apply in the longer term as some people will have to live in different accommodation. And we're also looking in Brisbane particularly of children having to go to different school buildings as well as the recovery effort goes along.
Yes. And so the more things that are changing in the broader dimensions of the child's life, the more important it is to have those little familial and familiar routines that you can carry with you whenever you go.
That's the children that have been directly affected by the flood. But of course, then there is a much broader community of children who will perhaps see things on television or hear their parents talking about such things. And I guess there might be a lot of scared little people at the moment in Australia because of what's happened in the wider community.
Yes, you're right. I think it's important to realise that watching floods over and over again on television can be...
Or any disaster,
that's right, can be really distressing for children. I think what is interesting about these most recent floods is that it was very wet and it was the school holidays and a lot of families were indoors at home, and tellies are huge these days. So some of those television screens fill the room, and that flood footage was compelling and awful, and it was mesmerising to watch. And it was on all day and all night. And so a lot of children will have been subjected to a lot of television footage of the floods, which is a distressing thing. A lot of children will have also been subjected to a lot of adults talking about the floods and being distressed and upset themselves, because when it first really hit the media, it was with some tragic and devastating events. And parents do talk about these things with friends and family. It's a way that adults process it. But we also need to be mindful of the presence of children when we are talking about things. And one general rule of thumb is to make sure that you're not talking about things in child's hearing unless you're talking about it at a level at which they can understand.
Is it a case of just making sure that little ears aren't listening when you're talking about it? I mean, as a parent, that is pretty hard to keep the children out of adult conversations.
Yes, it is. And with little children, when they're with you all the time, it can be very hard to have some time to yourself to be able to talk about these things. And so we need to consider that parents' needs, which might be to debrief and talk with friends and to be informed and to watch world events or events that are happening in your country and to know what's going on, are different to children's needs, which are particularly for the younger children, which are to continue to feel that their world is a safe and familiar and place that they can trust. So the challenge for parents is to find a way of meeting those needs without that being a difficult thing for the children. So luckily with young children, you know, you can get them to bed earlier. And so, you know, that can be a time to be catching up and talking with people and watching the news. That brings up another issue about media representations of dramatic events, which is that children don't understand time and place in the same way that adults do. So that when they do watch distressing things on the television, for example, these most recent floods, younger children are often quite likely to think that these floods are happening very close by to them. They don't understand that these floods might be in a different state or miles and miles and miles away, or, you know, only impacting on people who live in low-lying areas near floods. For them, it might be that it's just happening around the corner. So parents, if children are watching and hearing about these events, need to help them understand where these events are happening and when these events are happening. Because the other thing about media is that we get to see stories that happened, things that happened last week, still today. You know, we get to re-see a lot of old footage. Children are not going to understand that this is not yet another big wall of water rushing through Toowoomba. This is that tragic flood that happened over a week ago, and that's in the past now, and we're in a different place now. And the other thing that comes up too with preparing, which is a media sort of thing, around preparing for any disaster, is that around the time of something like floods that are, rivers that are rising in your region, or bushfires that are in your region, is that actually parents do need to be informed. They do need to be listening to the radio to be knowing what's going on. And so how then do you keep updates so that you know when you might need to evacuate or enact your plan with your children around? And so, again, you know, the use of earphones or turning it on every hour to just get a little bit of an update can be good. And it's also good for parents as well, because it's overwhelming to be listening to, you know, hours and hours and hours of dramatic news. And if we're parenting, you know, we also do need to be, you know, present and loving as well.
Once children get to primary school, there's a lot of education campaigns about what to do if there's a fire in the house. Do those sort of campaigns feed on children's anxieties, or are they actually really helpful for families to discuss?
Well, interestingly, it's really helpful for children to have anticipated what might happen and to know what the family is going to do. So we really recommend that families involve the children. And it depends on the age of the children. So, of course, you're not going to do that with a very little child or a preschooler necessarily, but with slightly older children, actually involving them in making the plan, drawing it up, pinning it up on the wall, explaining what it is that this family is going to do if we should need to evacuate because there's a flood, the rivers are rising, or if we should need to leave home because there's a bushfire in the area. And the things that you would include on the plan that you've drawn up and put up on the wall or in some useful place, backs of toilet doors seem to be a popular place, or the fridge, are things like where we're going to go. So if we have to leave, where are we going to go? So children have got a picture in their mind, oh, we're going to go and stay with Auntie Sally, or we're going to go into town where there's a safe place and spend the day there, or whatever it is that this family has determined. How are we going to contact each other if, you know, Dad's or Mum's still at work? How are we going to get all the family together? That's important. What are we going to do with the pets? And what are we going to take? And so children can feel empowered and can have a greater sense of control over uncertain events if they know what they're going to do. And also having jobs that the children are responsible for is a really important part of both preparedness, but it's also a really important part of recovery. So when children are given meaningful, purposeful tasks, they actually do feel a greater sense of control, which helps their well-being. So, for example, if you're preparing to evacuate for floods or fire or big storm or cyclone or whatever, there's a lot of things that we might at some stage need to prepare for. You know, a useful job that a child can have is to be filling up the water bottles and taking the water bottles around and making sure everybody's drinking regularly. You could spend quite a lot of time actually going to each member of the family, you know, making them drink, going back, filling up the water bottles, or cutting sandwiches and preparing sandwiches for everybody to take, or
packing the teddies.
Yes, packing the teddies, packing your own bag, bringing the pets inside and whatever you've planned to do with the pets, or filling sandbags. There was a lot of children that were involved in a community near us with the adults filling sandbags and successfully managed to stop the levee from being breached. And that gives them a great sense of something to do that's purposeful and useful.
I guess the other thing that a lot of parents might be coming up against as well is children tend to process these things through having nightmares about them as well. How would you suggest dealing with just concerns that children have of a risk that perhaps isn't relevant to them?
Interestingly, natural disasters are actually high on a list of things that children do fear. And they are, can be, big, dramatic, unexpected events. It might help if we start by talking about what are the signs that a child is distressed or unsettled by something. Because not all children will be. Some children find it quite exciting to be caught up in some drama. And of course it depends too on the degree to which they are caught up. And, you know, we know which children are more vulnerable to being distressed, and it's got a lot to do with the actual event itself. So if, for example, they thought they were going to die or they thought somebody in their family was going to die, that's a very distressing experience, and children may well be much more distressed for a longer period of time if that was their experience. If they've lost a lot, if they've been displaced from their home, if they've had to go to a different school, of course, if family members or people that they know have been killed, or if pets have been lost as well, those are really threatening and upsetting events. But how can you tell if a child is upset? Because they don't necessarily show it in the way that adults might show it. And often it's through changes in what would be normal behaviour for any one child. And very often it comes up as regression. So when children start to behave younger than they actually were behaving, so they might be bedwetting again, or they might go back to thumb sucking, or they might be more clingy, or they might be, yes, often it's also a deterioration in behaviour that a parent thinks sees as just being a general naughty. Deterioration. That's right, being more naughty, being more irritable, fighting more temper tantrums, being really fussy to eat, hard to settle, waking up in the middle of the night. And so, of course, nightmares would be another one. And children also often express how they're feeling through drawings or through play. And so watching whether there are any changes in the things that they're drawing. I just heard that a childcare centre up in Sydney discovered the children were drawing pictures of floods. So, you know, that's a good example of a child in a very adaptive way processing some of what they've been experiencing.
Where can parents go for more help if they think that they need it?
Well, we do have several online resources on our website, www.psychology.org.au. And so we've got some brochures there for parents around how to help children prepare for natural disasters. Now, we've currently got one for cyclones and one for bushfires, and clearly we'll need to now have one for floods and, you know, severe storms, because that, we anticipate, will be something that, you know, many people around Australia will be subjected to. And we also have several resources for helping children to recover. And the Red Cross also have some excellent resources around helping children prepare for disasters and helping them to recover. And they've got some lovely resources that children can actually work through, you know, workbooks where they can work through them themselves and answer questions and play games.
For any more information on these links, please check out the Baby Talk page on your ABC Radio website, or you can find us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/ABC Baby Talk. See you next time.